491.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware, I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded and produced for WVUD and our podcast listeners by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. The opinions represented in this program by hosts or guests do not necessarily reflect those of WVUD, the University of Delaware, or my own political campaign committee. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFDRadio or like us on Facebook. This is the Arsenal for Democracy.
This land is your land. This land is my land. California. New York Island. Redwood Forest, Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy, episode 336, recorded on Sunday, December 6th, 2020. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line, as always, from Idaho is Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Bill.
This week, we're going to be talking about Brady lists. This is a concept related to Brady disclosure, which Rachel is about to describe. The specific subset within Brady disclosure of a Brady list is the list that prosecutors keep or don't keep, as we'll talk about, of unreliable police officers, also informally known as Brady cops, who basically either can't be called to the stand as witnesses, or if they do, and the defense understands that they're an unreliable witness with a history of lying or other criminal activity, they can potentially impugn that witness and, get their defendant a better trial, essentially. So, Rachel, could you talk to us about, first, the origin of Brady disclosure, what that refers to, what that means? Then we'll talk about some of the problems with Brady disclosure and specifically the Brady lists.
Right. So the origin comes from the Supreme Court case Brady v. Maryland, which happened in 1963. So the background is Brady was a man on trial for murder. He had an accomplice, Boblett. These two men allegedly stole this man's car and then killed him. So Brady's defense was that Boblett carried out the murder on his own. The prosecution actually withheld a statement from Boblett that confirmed this series of events. However, Brady was sentenced to death. Once they found out about this withheld statement, they took it to the Maryland Court of Appeals, which affirmed the Brady's conviction, but then agreed to a retrial for sentencing, as he was sentenced to death. So Brady's defense hoped to get the conviction overturned by the Supreme Court. However, the Supreme Court upheld the Maryland Court of Appeals ruling, but Brady was resentenced to life imprisonment, and later he did get paroled, and he got to live out the rest of his life outside of prison. So this set up the Brady disclosure. Prosecutors are required to turn over all their evidence to defendants, especially exculpatory evidence or witness impeachment factors. So evidence that can make the defendant look less guilty, or that witness impeachment, that unreliable witness that we mentioned earlier. Examples of this Brady disclosure are, this comes from the Wikipedia article on Brady disclosures, the prosecutor must disclose an agreement not to prosecute a witness in exchange for the witness's testimony, which happens a lot. Prosecutors try to get people to testify against other people and give them those non-prosecution agreements. The prosecutor must disclose leniency or preferential treatment agreements made with witnesses in exchange for testimony. The prosecutor must disclose exculpatory evidence known only to the police. So the prosecutor has a duty to reach out to the police and establish regular procedures by which the police inform the prosecutor's office of anything that tends to prove the innocence of the defendant. Not all exculpatory evidence is required to be disclosed by Brady and its progeny. Only evidence that is, quote, material to guilt or punishment must be disclosed, because its disclosure would create a reasonable probability of changing the outcome of the proceeding. The prosecutor is not obligated to personally review police files in search of exculpatory information when the defendant asks for it, but to allow the defense reasonable access. The Supreme Court observed in Strickler v. Green, I guess that must be one of Brady's progeny. Thus, the term Brady violation is sometimes used to refer to any breach of the broad obligation to disclose exculpatory evidence, that is, to any suppression of so-called Brady material, although strictly speaking, there is never a real Brady violation unless the nondisclosure was so serious that there is a reasonable probability that the suppressed evidence would have produced a different verdict. The prosecutor must disclose arrest photographs of the defendant when those photos do not match the victim's description. Some state systems have expansively defined Brady material to include many other items, including, for example, any documents which might reflect negatively on a witness's credibility. And this leads us to the Brady cops. Police officers who have been dishonest are sometimes referred to as Brady cops. Because of the Brady ruling, prosecutors are required to notify defendants and their attorneys whenever a law enforcement official involved in their case has a sustained record for knowingly lying in an official capacity. The growing use of Brady, both in the federal and state sectors, is one of the most important changes affecting police officers' employment. However, there are some obstacles to these Brady lists of cops, and they just kind of don't work as they're supposed to. There's a Criminal Legal News article linked in the show notes that summarizes this. Even in jurisdictions where Brady lists exist, there are four main obstacles that prevent defendants from exercising their constitutional right to use the information. 1. Investigations concluding that a cop has engaged in misconduct may happen very slowly, if at all. 2. When a crooked cop gets a job in a different jurisdiction, the Brady list doesn't follow him or her. 3. Police departments block prosecutors' access to information. Sometimes state laws even prohibit access. And 4. Often the prosecutors who do obtain credibility-damaging information refused to turn over the Brady list to defense attorneys, which is wildly unconstitutional, but it happens anyways.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about some various articles in the past couple of years on this particular topic to show sort of how egregious the situation is and kind of the overall problem with it. So USA Today actually did some very important research work on this. And something that I wanted to just mention in passing is that, in my opinion, USA Today, which I think would surprise a lot of people, does some of the best research reporting and investigative journalism, and especially data journalism, on issues around criminality in the police departments across the United States. And they've done various research, I think, on fatalities and injuries from high-speed vehicle pursuits, things like that. Obviously, they do, you know, as some other publications like the Washington Post do and so forth, various things on police brutality and police killings of various people. But they also get into the weeds on some of this kind of stuff, like these Brady lists and list violations. And they had both some important data points to talk about, as well as some specific examples that I thought were particularly telling. So they said in a October 2019 article, thousands of people have faced criminal charges or gone to prison based in part on testimony from law enforcement officers deemed to have credibility problems by their bosses or by prosecutors. At least 300 prosecutors' offices across the nation are not taking steps necessary to comply with the Supreme Court mandates. Now, as Rachel said, one of the important kind of caveats with the Brady decision and the various subsequent decisions expanding upon it has been that not only is a lot of this stuff kind of voluntary on the part of the prosecutors, which obviously leads to abuses, but also supposedly the rule is that they only have to turn over stuff, whether it's this specific type of list on witnesses and information about the witness's credibility, but also just other disclosures in general, is that they only have to turn those over if not turning it over would probably change the outcome of the case. Now, of course, they're going to use their own judgment on what that line is in a way that favors them. So the USA Today article from 2019 says, in Miami-Dade County, internal training presentations obtained by USA Today showed prosecutors being taught legal tactics to avoid disclosing officers' histories. The documents say the burden of proving they covered up a questionable officer's history is on the defense. The end of the slideshow casts disclosure as a game of strategy between prosecutors and the defense. And they showed some of the stuff, quoted some of the stuff from the presentation, and it's very clear that they basically, at Miami-Dade County, at the DA's office, their position officially is that unless it's pretty clear that failure to disclose the credibility of the police witness would change the case outcome, then you don't have to turn it over. And so, of course, they're just going to say, well, no, you know, there wouldn't have been any change. This person's a dirtbag, etc. We don't have to disclose this. USA Today also reviewed discipline files for Little Rock police officers going back 15 years, then compared them with court records. The analysis found officers who the department determined lied or committed crimes were witnesses in at least 4,000 cases. Since 1988, data from the National Registry of Exonerations shows 987 people have been convicted, then exonerated, in cases that specifically involved a combination of official misconduct by prosecutors and perjury or a false report by police and other witnesses. Those people spent an average of 12 years each behind bars. As always, as Rachel noted, we always upload show notes with each episode at arsenalfordemocracy.com, so you can read all of these links and find out other stuff that we didn't get to talking about in this week's episode. I want to talk now about Massachusetts specifically, because WBUR, one of the public radio stations here, has also been doing some very important work on this, and specifically in conjunction with the courts and various other sort of public records systems, have been significantly pressuring the DA's offices in Massachusetts to turn over their records, not only to turn over these lists, which, as we've just talked about with the USA Today case, and Rachel's going to talk about in a bit as well, many counties simply don't keep records, but also to make those lists public, which is a major step in terms of making these Brady lists of unreliable police witnesses actually functional and usable to the defense. And there's also various other uses, as I think I'm going to try to explain here later. So basically, back in earlier in 2020, there was a court case in the Massachusetts courts that contended that there had been insufficient disclosure and that this was, you know, too much of a burden on the defense and so forth. And so the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court took up this question, and they wrote in their decision a couple of things. They said, first, disclosure of Brady information to other defendants. Under the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, Article 12 of the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights, a prosecutor must disclose exculpatory information to a defendant that is either material to guilt or punishment. And then they have a citation there for that. When the reliability of a given witness may well be determinative of guilt or innocence, non-disclosure of evidence affecting credibility falls within this general rule. And they cite a case called Giglio. Evidence tending to impeach the credibility of a key prosecution witness is clearly exculpatory. And that goes back to an earlier Massachusetts case as well. Therefore, in the parlance of the criminal justice bar, Giglio information is Brady information. The Brady obligation comprehends evidence which provides some significant aid to the defendant's case, whether it furnishes corroboration of the defendant's story, calls into question a material, although not indispensable, element of the prosecution's version of events, or challenges the credibility of a key prosecution witness. And they also said that they didn't think that they had the authority, I guess under state law or the Constitution, to require the Attorney General and every district attorney's office to maintain a disclosure list, but, quote, we strongly recommend that they do. So then WBUR continued to undertake the work of asking, first of all, which counties in Massachusetts, some of which, like the one that I live in, Middlesex County, that's one of the largest counties by population in the country. And they basically asked of all the counties in Massachusetts which DA's offices had Brady lists of unreliable police witnesses and which ones didn't have them, but also tried to get them released if they did exist. Five DA offices in Massachusetts said they do not keep any list at all. And again, that goes back to the USA Today stuff. WBUR argues that that goes against the recent guidance from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, where they said that they strongly recommend that all the offices maintain those lists. Middlesex County DA Marion Ryan has 124 officers from 37 different departments on her Brady list as of August. And as far as I could tell from the reading on this, Middlesex County, where I live, has basically one of the best Brady lists, definitely in the state and probably also in the country. And this was also subsequently released publicly. Ryan said her office, in addition to tracking arrests, prosecutions, and media reports, proactively asks police departments to notify it of internal affairs investigations. In its review of the Middlesex list, WBUR discovered cases involving officers that were never made public, including a Somerville police officer convicted of stealing $83,000 from a police union account and two other officers suspected of embezzling union funds. And again, if these cases were never even made public, especially if they were only ever suspected and it could never be proved, then there's basically no way for the defense attorneys to know that they're supposed to be getting this disclosure, right? There's no other independent way for them to verify this until these Brady lists become public information. Now, Suffolk County, and that's Boston and a few of the other surrounding communities, Suffolk County's list doesn't appear to have relied as much on internal affairs information from the Boston police or other departments. Most internal affairs information is, in fact, sourced to the Boston Globe, which means that there's some reason to wonder if the prosecution district attorney's offices in Suffolk County are not even getting the information that they need from the police departments about their officers in order to develop these Brady lists, if they're having to go basically look at news reports from the Boston Globe. Defense attorneys said the list seems under-inclusive, missing several pending and completed internal investigations of officers. DA Rachel Rollins of Suffolk County, she had basically run on a sort of pro-reform agenda for the DA's office when she was elected to that. She said, when releasing the list to the public, quote, "When the credibility of law enforcement is in question, all participants in the system and the public should be aware of that," she said. "The people of Suffolk County deserve to know that the public officials they rely on for their safety are truly invested in it. Anything less is a betrayal of their trust and our obligation to serve. However, I would note here, as WBUR does, Rollins' office originally did not want to make their officer disclosure list public. When WBUR initially requested the list under the state's public records law, the DA declined to provide it, citing the attorney work product exemption. WBUR appealed that decision in August to the state supervisor of records. The supervisor sided with WBUR 2 weeks later, ordering that the DA's office provide the requested material, quote, as soon as practicable. Responding to WBUR's reporting in an interview with the Boston Globe's editorial board, Rollins committed to making the full list public by Friday, and this was the Friday of the when this WBUR article came out in September of 2020. However, Rollins' office released the list just before 9 p.m. on Friday night, so not exactly a huge show of transparency there, although it is out, which is the important part, but again, clearly very reluctantly. There was another earlier WBUR reporting on this in August of 2020, and they talked to Randy Gioia, who oversees the Public Defender Division of the Committee for Public Counsel Services. Quote, "Police officer honesty during their testimony when they're writing police reports is really the irreducible core of our criminal system of justice." And he said that he and many other defense attorneys believe officers who previously have been disciplined for lying are routinely allowed to testify as state witnesses because prosecutors fail to track police misconduct. If you don't have that list, you're basically starting from scratch in every case, and you're not going to uncover anything unless it's the most obvious high-profile cases. You're not going to uncover the instances of dishonesty or misconduct of another type, like police brutality. WBUR also noted, under the Brady Doctrine and as court representative of the state, prosecutors have a two-pronged duty. First, to find any damaging information about their own witnesses that they may need to disclose to defense, and then to try to win their case, which may mean using those same witnesses. And that's something I want to come back to when we discuss this in a minute. For example, court disclosures kept by Middlesex DA's office and obtained by WBUR show Westford officer William Lupp Jr. was the subject of three internal affairs investigations between 1997 and 2016, one after he was, quote, "found to have been untruthful," end quote, about a civilian in his cruiser during an active investigation, one after he violated police rules around the handling of evidence, and one after money went missing from the station's evidence room. The department found Luppold guilty of the first two, and he resigned in 2017 during the third investigation after 29 years on the force. Of the 124 Middlesex County officers on the list, 66 were confirmed to be still employed by their departments. DA Ryan said the conduct of the officers on their list has led her to drop several cases entirely, as the Lowell Sun first reported last March. Ryan dropped over a dozen cases after officers in the Lowell Special Investigations Unit were caught falsifying records related to a drug bust and concealing a wiretap. And Rachel, before we get to Idaho to close this out, I wanted to just take a minute to discuss this here and get your thoughts on this. Obviously, hugely important that these two counties in Massachusetts have released these lists publicly. These are things that anybody can search. I went on the internet and looked up, you know, my own department to see if anyone, and there were people that used to be on the list, but no longer work at the police department where I'm a city councilor. But this is still very incomplete lists, and then we've got all these counties that don't have it at all. But one of the things that I'm thinking of as I'm reading all this is that it seems likely to me that in many cases, beyond the obvious resistance at the surface level to just everyone sticking together, you know, thin blue line, nobody talking out of turn, etc., and that the prosecutors want to have the cops' backs on everything, the bigger problem here is that they understand, and this also leads to the police departments not wanting to turn over this information to the prosecutors. If you have a police officer who has major credibility problems, a history of perjury, a history of lying about witness experiences, things like that, whether it's lying on the stand or off the stand or whatever, if you have these credibility problems with these officers, they can no longer do their jobs. Something that comes up in city council discussions around policing is this idea that any police officer needs to be ready to respond to any crime that might come up just by chance near them, even if they're just out on a traffic directing detail, with the idea being that any situation could potentially escalate to something very serious at any moment. If that is true, then by definition, let's say that you even like just have a guy on 911 dispatch, or you have a guy that is only assigned to work traffic details or something like that, and you think, okay, that's safe enough. Well, now you've got a problem, because what if a crime happens in front of that guy on traffic detail and he has to go be first on the scene, and now he's the primary witness in that case? What if he's called to testify about the 911 call interaction if he was put on 911 detail? Almost any job that you give them, at some point they might need to be serving as a witness, even setting aside any of the other potential problems. And the prosecutors and the police departments know and understand that essentially that person's not going to be able to do their job anymore once a Brady list exists, even if it's not public, but especially if it is public. That police officer is going to need to leave that job because they're no longer able to perform the functions of a police officer. So, Rachel, I was curious what you thought about that. I know that there's certainly even less of a disclosure or record keeping in Idaho as there is in Massachusetts, but I'm wondering if this is one of the reasons for that in many places.
Yeah, like you said, once you have a credibility issue, you can't really perform any of the duties. I completely agree with that. And the examples that you came up with definitely illustrate that. Like, yeah, if you're the lone witness and you are an unreliable witness, you just blew the entire case. So therefore, you really shouldn't be involved at all. Like you said, Idaho, the USA Today team reached out to 7 Idaho counties, and none of those counties keep a Brady list. They didn't choose very populated counties. I was kind of curious what their methodology was, but
my guess was they reached out to all of them and only heard back from some of them.
Yeah, that could be the case. There is an Idaho Press Tribune article, which is kind of centered around Ada and Canyon counties, which are the 2 most populated counties in the state. I'm not sure if Canyon County is number 2, but Ada County is definitely number 1. So in Ada and Canyon counties, none of the prosecutor's office keeps a list. The Boise City prosecutor's office doesn't keep a list. The BPD doesn't keep a list, nor does the Ada County Sheriff's Office. So we aren't really big on the transparency, I guess. However, Canyon County did provide public records to the Idaho Press. So they confirmed that between July 18, 2018 and July 18, 2019, Canyon County prosecutors sent Brady letters in 55 cases. And all of those cases involved the same one law enforcement officer. The year prior to that, the prosecutor's office sent Brady letters in 67 cases. Those cases involved 5 different police officers. However, Ada County, the most populated county in the state, did not have a case management system that was amenable to a keyword search. They use Odyssey case management software, and basically a spokesperson said that they would basically have to hand count actual files and like manually review these case records. Like, they couldn't figure out another method that could produce faster results. So it's really that, I guess that's the 5th obstacle to these Brady lists, is that software just doesn't work for that, which is pretty mind-blowing to me. Like, I think that should be a requirement for a prosecutor's office, is to have a keyword searchable software. That seems pretty basic to me. But they did highlight that the BPD has had at least one officer commit a Brady violation within the past year and a half. She made conflicting statements while under oath in a non-criminal case. And this case is actually pretty wild. She accused her neighbor's boyfriend of stalking her and her husband, and she used her police credentials to run this man's license plate, and then they posted information to Nextdoor. So they basically started a harassment campaign against this man. They got him arrested for stalking when there was absolutely no evidence of that. And the stalking case reached his ex-wife, and his ex-wife started a custody hearing based on his conviction. So it pretty much ruined his life. He had to be monitored with an ankle bracelet. when this came to light, he got his case investigated. They found out she was lying and she was using her police credentials inappropriately. She got fired. She is no longer employed by the Boise Police Department. And they actually had to attempt to contact 47 defendants in cases for which she was a witness. And for 19 cases that they, I believe the Idaho Statesman, another regional newspaper, they researched 19 of these cases. And most of those defendants had pled guilty to their cases. However, this is a grist for another episode. Oftentimes, guilty pleas are made under duress. There's a lot of pressure to plead guilty to cases just to expedite the process, to not lose your job, not lose your livelihood. So there's the potential for many of these cases to be overturned based on this unreliable cop.
Right. And we're seeing that happen in places like Lowell, Massachusetts, where cases are getting dropped because of these witness unreliability issues within the police. We're seeing, I think, in Philadelphia, a lot of convictions, the conviction integrity unit being reviewed or potentially overturned based on many, many police officers that are deemed unreliable. To my mind, the Brady list issue in terms of the unreliable police witnesses, as well as Brady disclosures in general, is something that is a relatively minor piece of the puzzle that could potentially have a very outsized impact if it were significantly reformed. And we've talked about the reasons why there is a lot of resistance to reforming that is because of an understanding of the potential ripple effects that it could have on changing the status quo. But in my mind, I think it was even in the Supreme Court case, in the original Brady case, that it was considered that this was an issue, or that the justice system in general, it's not just about putting away the bad guys and the criminals. It's also about making sure that the cases are handled fairly and that justice is done and that we don't convict innocent people. But I think there's two sides to this, right? If you don't have adequate Brady disclosure, and especially those Brady lists of unreliable witnesses, yeah, it certainly affects potentially putting people away who are innocent in many cases. And that's what a lot of the sources that we talked about today go over. But the other clear point is that it also means that you aren't keeping people safe, even when there are actual crimes being committed, because you could potentially have a situation almost like a TV plot line where some, you know, real dirtbag murderer type guy, whatever, ends up walking free because the police department kept around some really unreliable witness who could be called into question on their credibility as a witness and couldn't even testify because the prosecutors couldn't risk it. And the answer is not, oh, we shouldn't do Brady disclosure. The answer is we need to have very, very strong Brady disclosure and all of that information public. And by extension, we need to get rid of all those police officers who aren't reliable and have committed these crimes, not just for cleaning up the departments in general, but for keeping all of us safe more broadly. So, Rachel, thank you so much for coming on this week to talk about the issue of Brady lists and Brady disclosures in general.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
And again, all of the articles that we talked about today and some more will be up at arsenalfordemocracy.com in the show notes.